some grisly murder scene or other. Until 3 nights ago, when he didn't come home at all.
When his twin goes missing.
James didn't just vanish. He left breadcrumbs, coded messages.
Can a puzzle setter solve the biggest conundrum of his life?
I'm impersonating a police officer.
Yes, but he's your brother.
That's really not the legal loophole you think it is.
Starring David Mitchell and Anna Maxwell-Martin. Ludwig.
Bit awkward, really. I think I might just have solved a murder.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
And later this evening, David Mitchell will be discussing his role in Ludwig right here on Radio 4. He's joining Front Row at 7:15. We're now on Radio 4 with a new series of Paul Sinner's Perfect Pub Quiz starting in just a few weeks. Here's a chance to warm up with an episode from the first series from 2022.
Geography and history and music, films and telly. Everyone who's ever lived from Taylor Swift to Botticelli. What a fun packed evening this is. Welcome to Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz.
Very kind. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz, which I, quizzer and comedian Paul Sinha, put my personal spin on this glorious art. Because a pub quiz is not just an opportunity for a group of people to start the evening as friends and end it having developed long-standing, festering resentments that will never, ever disappear. Because the captain of the team refused to believe that Casino Royale was the first James Bond novel to be published. It is not just an opportunity for old people to look at young people with contempt that they don't remember the plot to episode 3 of the second series of On the Buses. It is not just an opportunity for young people to look at old people with contempt that they don't recognise a photograph of Doja Cat. On the latter, I'm very much in the old person category when it comes to Doja Cat. No idea, thinking he might be some sort of Marvel superhero. When I host a pub quiz, the most important thing for me, by far, is that I can use my TV profile to negotiate a bigger fee. But also, I like contestants to leave the pub valuing knowledge. Because, as the famous phrase goes, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Which poet wrote those words?
Alexander Pope.
Nice try, mate, nice try. It wasn't Alexander Pope. It wasn't at all. Because what he said was, a little learning is a dangerous thing. Trick question, mate, trick question. Don't worry about incorrectly rushing into that answer. Be aware that fools rush in where angels fear to tread. That's fine, to err is human, to forgive divine. But little learning is a dangerous thing. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And to err is human, to forgive divine. And not just all quotations from Alexander Pope, but they're all from the same work, his 1711 poem, An Essay on Criticism, written at the age of 23. I've got to say, that's really not bad for a 23-year-old. If that sounds like I'm damning with faint praise, well, that's one of his lines as well. A century and a half later, Oscar Wilde would say, there are two ways to dislike poetry. One is to dislike it. The other is to read Pope. And yet, in the current day, his reputation remains solid, given that he is the second most quoted author in the English language. But one final thing about Alexander Pope, please don't get him confused with Pope Alexander. The most famous of the eight Popes Alexander, or seven if you don't count the anti-pope, was Pope Alexander VI, whose modern reputation is very much influenced by the 1981 BBC TV series The Borgias and the 2011 Showtime TV series The Borgias. Pope Alexander VI was born Rodrigo Borgia and was played by Jeremy Irons in the latter series and by the Italian actor Adolfo Celli in the earlier series. If you know the name Adolfo Celli, it is because he starred as a villain in a 1967 film also starring Bernard Lee, Lois Maxwell, and of course, the great Connery as a British spy. And what was the name of the film?
Thunderball.
Well, nice try, mate, but that was 1965. The 1967 film in which Celli parodied his role and which Bernard Lee and Lois Maxwell parodied their most famous roles was actually called OK Connery. The plot of this film involves James Bond's younger brother, a character called Neil Connery. And does anyone know the name of the actor who played James Bond's younger brother, Neil Connery? Neil Connery. Sean Connery's younger brother. Neil Connery played Neil Connery in a film called OK Connery. The film was a resounding failure, and I can't help thinking that if you had to pick one year to release a half-assed James Bond parody, the year of the original Casino Royale was probably a bad choice. But back to the infamous Borgia, who was Pope Alexander VI. Rodrigo is now regarded much like Marmite, in that it's a foreign word with seven letters in its name. He had a reputation for corruption and adultery and was accused as such by his big rival, the Dominican friar Girolamo Savonarola. His first response influenced so much how modern politics is now run. He set up an internal inquiry of his own, which found him entirely innocent, despite the fact that he obviously did it. And by innocent, I mean not guilty. Not that he was secretly one of the 13 popes named innocent. Girolamo Savonarola has three big claims to fame. Firstly, he has the longest name of any celebrity to consist entirely of alternating vowels and consonants. Frankly, he makes Goran Ivanisevic look like an unseeded amateur. Secondly, Savonarola's actions inspired the name of which 1980s novel?
Bonfire of the
Vanities. We're in tonight, aren't we? It's Bonfire of the Vanities by Tom Wolfe, named after the events in Florence on Shrove Tuesday, 1497, when supporters of Savonarola collected up and burnt books, manuscripts, artworks, mirrors, cosmetics, playing cards, and musical instruments that were considered sinful. That must have made one hell of a pancake. And thirdly, in 1498, Savonarola himself had his life extinguished on the orders of the increasingly weary Pope Alexander VI. Because what Pope Alexander understood deeply was that a little burning was a dangerous thing. Shut up! So before we move on to my next question, let me explain that this week, the theme is everything. Absolutely anything you like, and in that spirit, I'll invite the audience to ask me anything.
According to the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders...
whose judgment I don't trust, by the way.
How many used cars were sold in 2021?
I remember this because it was in Mastermind. They got it wrong by one, and they didn't win Mastermind as a result. 477,622.
No, it's 7,530,956.
Who are you? Did Ranganathan send you? Is that what happened?
So my home country of Canada is an officially bilingual country, but which provinces, if any, are officially bilingual?
Well, obviously, Quebec is not the answer. I was about to get to that. He asked me. New Brunswick is officially English and French, and...
Well, maybe the Northwest Territories count in
there. No. We don't use the word Eskimo now.
Native Indian.
Cancel him! We don't use the word Eskimo. The word is snow people. definitely New Brunswick. I'm going to stick at New Brunswick.
Any others?
No.
New Brunswick's the only one.
Oh, there we go. Your next question is, which man who died at the age of 91 in 2018 was born on a family farm called Elm Tarid? Elmtaryd, near the village of Agunarid, Agunnerid.
Robert Mugabe?
It is not Robert Mugabe. Geographically, when you hear the answer, you'll regret that guess. Elmtaryd and Agunarid. OK, this person was something of a prodigy. He started selling matches at the age of five and by seven was travelling further afield on his bicycle, literally pedalling to sell matches. He expanded into selling fish, Christmas tree decorations, ballpoint pens and pencils. When he was 17, he was sat at his uncle's kitchen table when he founded a mostly mail-order business, which he named after his initials, followed by the E of Elmterid and the A of Agunarid. IKEA. His name is Ingvar Kamprad. And you know what happens when you put the letters I and K before the letters E and A? You completely lose your Sunday afternoon. But gain six packets of tea lights. IKEA is now known globally as the world's largest furniture retailer and is best known in the UK for the concept first coined in 1987 of, actually, there is a reason to go to Warrington. There is often a downside to companies founded in the 1930s and 1940s. And yes, it seems quite clear that the teenage Ingvar Kamprad was, how can I put this euphemistically, not exactly completely resistant to prevailing German political philosophies of the time. Perhaps the clue was that the IKEA cafe started selling meatballs, but just the one. But it's OK. In later years, a spokesman for Kamprad said that although he had long admitted flirting with fascism, there are no Nazi sympathiser thoughts in Ingvar's head whatsoever. Phew! That's fine, then. Oh, talking of Nazis, which famous German sportswear brand, the third largest in the world, was founded in 1948 and originally named Ruda?
Puma!
Well, somebody got it right, but it wasn't the majority of you. Adidas, as any fool knows, is the second largest sportswear manufacturer in the world, after Nike. Incidentally, if Nike bought up Victoria's Secret, there'd be the convenient meeting of companies that share their names with both the Greek and Roman goddesses of victory. And while on the subject of Victoria's Secret, the founder, Ron Raymond, is the most famous of the 1,400 people to have done what since it was first possible in 1937? You won't know this. He ended his life by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. But enough of depressing suicides. This is a comedy show. So let's get back to the Nazis. In 1924, the brothers Adi and Rudolf Dassler founded the Dassler Brothers Shoe Factory. Despite the fact that both brothers were, now how can I put this euphemistically, not exactly completely resistant to prevailing German political philosophies of the time, they nonetheless persuaded a talented athlete called Jesse Owens to use their handmade spikes at the 1936 Summer Olympic Games, in a deal that we now call mixed messages. The Second World War put a strain on the brothers' relationship, and a rift started developing during a 1943 Allied bombing raid. Adi Dassler and his family fled to a bomb shelter that his brother's family were already in. Rudolf allegedly said, "The dirty bastards are back again." He meant the Allied planes, but Adi Dassler thought he meant his family. Shortly after the war, the brothers decided to go their separate ways, and Adi Dassler founded... Unbelievably, you're correct. Adi Dassler founded Adidas after his own name, and Rudolf Dassler attempted the same trick, called his company... Ruda. Within weeks, it was decided there was a problem with the name. It was crap. I mean, imagine the conversation. I like your trainers. Ruda? OK, fatty, I like your stupid trainers. So they simply changed two of the letters and thus founded the world's third largest sportswear brand...
Puma.
That's right, Puma. The small Bavarian town of Herzogenaurach, with a population of only 20,000, is home to two of the three largest sportswear brands in the world, whose still bitter rivalry means it used to be known as the City of Bent Necks, owing to its residents judging one another but glancing down at their preferred footwear brand. As far as I'm concerned, either brand is a step up from jackboots. A very stiff step. The stories of IKEA, Adidas and Puma are examples of how brands that are commonly seen on the high street or indeed in dispiriting business parks often have interesting origins. For instance, in 1920, in which German city did Hans Riegel found the company Haribo? The clue is in the question. Hans Regal Haribo.
On.
There we go, you got it. The H-A comes from Hans, the R-I comes from Regal, and the B-O comes from Bond. If only he had lived 200 kilometres northeast, it could have been called Harry Hamlin. One for Clash of the Titans fans here. That might be the stupidest joke I've ever written, but I'm standing by it, not least because the success of Harry Hamlin would have been guaranteed, given the children of Hamlin are notoriously susceptible to marketing gimmicks. Founded in 1931 by Shojiro Ishibashi, how did the Japanese company Bridgestone get its name?
Something to do with Firestone?
Well, they are something to do with Firestone, but that's an associated company. The surname of its founder, Ishibashi, literally means stone bridge. He used a translation of his own name to appeal more to the English-speaking market. The most incredible thing, though, is if his name means stone bridge, why did he call his company Bridgestone instead? The answer is, just didn't like the word stone bridge. Sometimes in this job, you research something for 4 hours, and that is the best result you can get. Bridgestone is often called the biggest manufacturer of tyres in the world. But actually, the answer to this question is more surprising. Which is the largest manufacturer of tyres in the world?
Lego.
Lego makes 732 million tyres for its toys each year. And at this point, I'd make a joke about the sheer agony of stepping on a piece of Lego. But the last time I attempted to do so on an episode of The Chase, the Daily Star genuinely ran the headline, Paul Sinha shares details of grisly foot injuries in the last 2 years. True story. I mean, it's true that they printed it. Obviously, the story they printed was not a true story. So instead, I'll move on swiftly on to the next question, and with still with toy companies. Which major toy company, founded in Los Angeles in 1945, is named for its co-founders, Matt Matson and Elliot Handler? That's right, you're getting the hang of it now. It is Mattel, Matt Matson and Elliot Handler. The thing is, Matt Matson only lasted a year before selling his stake to Elliot Handler. And there was a third co-founder as well, who wasn't lucky enough to get any of their name onto the Mattel brand. That third co-founder was Elliot's wife, Ruth Handler, who turned out to be, by some margin, the most significant name in the history of Mattel. Because it was her idea, inspired by the interest of her daughter, Barbara, to introduce a lifelike doll to the international toy market. Compared to what they had before, yeah, lifelike. So she co-created Barbie with a designer called Jack Ryan. Your next question is about Jack Ryan, not the fictional CIA operative, the toy company designer. Jack Ryan, in 1975, became the sixth of nine men to achieve what feat? It was first achieved in 1935 by the Turkish intellectual Burhan Asaf Belge. It was last achieved in 1986 by the German-American businessman Frederick Prince von Anhalt. And since December the 18th, 2016, this achievement is very much illegal. How did you get that? The answer is they married Zsa Zsa Gabor. Round of applause there. That was 1975. He married Zsa Zsa Gabor. He's also known for what he did in 1976. He divorced Zsa Zsa Gabor. So the only co-founder of Mattel not to be represented in the company's name, co-designed the most iconic toy of the 20th century with the sixth husband of Zsa Zsa Gabor. Many people sneer at Barbie's reputation for presenting a very traditional idea of womanhood. But to be fair, Mattel have really upped their game in recent years. In 2021, they brought out their Women in Science range, including a doll of the Oxford University vaccinologist whose work in developing the AstraZeneca vaccine is very much one reason why we're not doing this series over Zoom. Her name is?
Sarah Gilbert.
Not to be confused with the actress Sarah Gilbert, known for playing Darlene in Roseanne and previously married to Linda Perry, the lead singer of Four Non-Blondes. But I would suggest an addition to the Women in Science range. A woman who had a radical mastectomy for breast cancer in 1970. She was so disappointed with the options for post-operative prostheses that she founded her own company that manufactured a more realistic version of women's breasts called Nearly Me, and who actually personally fitted one for former US First Lady Betty Ford. Does anyone know the name of this pioneering medical entrepreneur? It is Ruth Handler, the co-founder of Mattel and the co-creator of the Barbie doll. Come on, Mattel, you're doing sterling work in honouring great women. How about honouring the greatest of your women? I won't rest until Mattel has been renamed. You want the Ruth, you can't handle the Ruth. I'll admit it's a clunky name, but it was worth the pun. Before we move on, let's go back to the audience.
Of which event of the 20th century did physicist Richard Feynman write the following? For a successful technology, reality must take precedence over public relations. For nature cannot be fooled.
I've got a guess that's based on something. Is it the Challenger disaster of 1986? Oh,
so impressive. It is indeed.
The reason it was based on something is Richard Feynman was part of the committee that looked into the disaster, that led the inquiry.
Which was the first Olympic Games to have the Olympic flame lit by a runner with a torch?
Was that Berlin, 1936?
It was a Nazi idea.
Yeah. We're learning a lot about the Nazis today.
What's the connection between the TV chef, Anthony Worrell Thompson, and the actress, Margaret Rutherford?
Are they both less than 4'6"?
Possibly.
I don't know.
Margaret Rutherford taught Worrell Thompson to swim.
What we need to know is who taught Adam Peaty to cook, and then we got the whole thing complete. We now come to a variety pack of questions. The 1981 top two hit, More Than In Love, first appeared as a plot device in which famous UK TV drama?
Crossroads.
It is, unbelievably, Crossroads. What an answer that is. The only British soap opera to ever share its name with a number one hit for Blazing Squad. Its legendarily shonky production values made El Dorado look like El Camino. A 1981 plotline involved a pop singer recording a single in the fictional motel's basement recording studio. I can only imagine the recording studio at the Crossroads Motel being something of an edge in the ultra-competitive West Midlands budget accommodation market. And in a bold move, the fictional single was released and became a pop hit in reality. If you know the song was from Crossroads, then you know who sang it?
Kate Robbins.
Despite being Sir Paul McCartney's distant cousin, despite being the mother of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here series champion Emily Attack, despite providing backing vocals on the chart-topping Chicken song by Splitting Image, Kate Robbins' finest achievement is being an anagram of Bronski Beat. This is literally the only example of two major chart acts being complete anagrams of one another, something I blame entirely on the career decisions of Roy Kinnear and Ronnie Cray. Yeah, but it works. Your next question. What connects Kim Cattrall, Johnny Rotten, the Four Tops, and the tennis player Mats Wilander? Something very, very specific. They all missed the Pan Am Flight 103, which was blown up over Lockerbie in 1988. John Lydon claims he missed the flight because his wife took too long to pack. And Kim Cattrall missed the flight because at the last minute she changed her mind and went shopping instead. So there you have it. In black and white, gender stereotypes can save lives. She bought a teapot at Harrods for her mum, if you're wondering. And the Four Tops didn't show up because of a last minute scheduling change to Top of the Pops, despite promising repeatedly that they'd be there. Before we have our final few questions, my last chance to go to the audience to ask you for your own questions.
Apart from the connection of music, what have Elton John and Simon Le Bon got in common?
Elton John and Simon Le Bon? They both married people either called Yasmin or David. Is this anything to do with Elton John's surname, middle name being Hercules or Red?
No.
Watford? Oh, they were born in Pinner.
Well, no, they both went to Pinner School, went to the same grammar school.
Oh, nice one. Very, very good. Went to the same school. Not the same time, but that's good.
What unique type of item is worn by the main characters in the films Breathless,
Bonnie and Clyde and Baby Driver?
That's a great question. Does someone know the answer? Does someone... That wouldn't be unique.
Yeah, what's unique about them? Also in the film Chinatown.
Are they talking sunglasses? What could be unique about a pair of sunglasses?
There are sunglasses that have had one lens popped out.
Well, there you go. That's a very good question indeed. Your final questions tonight are all on Irish literature. Which novel by the Irish-American writer J.P. Dunleavy gives its name to the song that in December 2021 overtook Frank Sinatra's My Way to become the song which spent more weeks on the top 40 of the UK than any other song? Shall I give you a clue? December 2021. The answer is A Fairy Tale of New York. As we all know, the lyrics to this song are contentious and debate rages about whether it's acceptable to use that particular F word at Christmas. All I'll say is my dad is from a different generation, and when he's had a drink, the nickname he gives my husband is entirely up to him. The second question in Irish literature. As the River Liffey flows through Dublin, it is traversed by three different bridges which are named for major literary figures. Can you name all three? Joyce. Yeah, one is James Joyce.
Beckett.
One is Samuel Beckett. It's neither George Bernard Shaw or Oscar Wilde. The third of these bridges is named for the Irish socialist playwright Sean O'Casey, best known for the plays Shed of a Gunman and Juno and the Paycock. The bridge was opened in 2005 as a pedestrian bridge that also had two balanced cantilever arms that could swing open to allow larger boats to pass by. Yet, between 2010 and 2014, the bridge never once opened. Does anyone know why?
It was broken.
The bridge was not broken, no.
Broken?
Nope, the answer is that somebody lost the remote control. It really is as simple as that. Thanks to a budget crisis, the proud capital of a proud nation had to wait for 4 years for the bridge to be reprogrammed. Nobody knew where the remote control was and nobody has ever found it. But perhaps that's for the best, because at least an unsuspecting TV viewer didn't inadvertently cause a river traffic catastrophe by attempting to change channels from The Chase to Pointless at 5:55. I hope you've enjoyed this attempt to broaden the range of pub quiz questions. We now know that it was perfectly feasible in the 1980s for a budget motel to have a recording studio in its basement. We now have a vague idea of how many million second-hand cars are sold every year. We now know that the toy giant Mattel was named for the two least influential of its three founders. We now know that Margaret Rutherford taught a famous chef how to swim. And we now know that the world's second and biggest sportswear manufacturers only exist because of a ridiculous misunderstanding between Nazis. But most importantly, that the best attitude to have when anybody loses a very important remote control is that to err is human, to forgive divine. Thank you for listening. Paul Sinha's Perfect Pub Quiz is presented and written by me, Paul Sinha, with additional material by Oliver Levy and additional questions by the audience. The producer was Ed Morrish, and it was a Lead Mojo production for BBC Radio 4.
Paul Sinha will be back with a new series of Perfect Pub Quiz at the end of October. And next week on Radio 4...
New comedy on BBC Radio 4 with me, Hugh Dennis.
And me, Steve Punt.
Routemasters, in which we go on a journey through new and half-remembered knowledge as we attempt to find the most entertaining route between random topics, people, places and things.
We know very little except that we're going to be starting at beer, and over the course of the series we're going to gradually make our way to eternity.
Have you enjoyed putting together your route?
And a roller coaster.
I've got to get from prime numbers to the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Punt and Dennis, Routemasters.
The comedy show that takes the scenic route.
On Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.